G'day, I'm John Reed. I'm an ecologist from Eyre Peninsula, but also an author and, written a book about my grandfather.
You lead an extremely interesting life. You live on a private nature reserve.
Yeah, absolutely. We live between Kimber and Whyalla. Our block is 260 square kilometres, so it's a large patch of scrub with some mallee fowl and some rare dunnarts and things on it. And my wife and I are both ecologists, so we enjoy working there and looking after the environment there, and that's our home base, and we do a lot of consulting and research around the place.
That explains the nature reserve. What a wonderful life. I've been out there. I love the country out there.
Yeah, it's nice. It's a bit drier than Adelaide. We can do with some rain at the moment, and all our farmer mates are really keen on some more rain to get the season really cranking along. But no, it's nice country and a nice community to live in.
John, you've written a couple of books, but the one that we're going to discuss today is called Dear Grandpa Why, Reflections from Kokoda to Hiroshima. This is about your mother's father. What prompted you to write the book?
I've been asked that question several times, actually. It started off actually just trying to work out the motivations behind my grandfather signing up for World War II. My mother was two at the time and had a twin sister. Her father, like a lot of fathers in that era, went off to fight in the war. As it turned out, he lost his life in the war, and Mum really didn't know much about her father and about the final days or what happened there, but it was just by chance an American historian found a plane wreck not far from Kokoda about 10 years ago, and they traced that back to the plane that my grandfather was a co-pilot in, because he was an Australian pilot but flying in an American plane. Once that was found, we found out a whole lot more information. We got the logs from the pilot and other information, and could piece together some of what happened in his final days and final minutes. It raised a lot of questions, so I guess all those questions were going through my mind, and I sort of wrote a surreptitious letter to my grandfather. Dear Grandpa, why? Why did you do this? What happened? Did you get out of that cockpit when you were last seen trying to get out of the cockpit? Did you survive? And it sort of went from there, and as the story developed, there was a whole lot of new things came in, and we ended up visiting the wreck site. The story just grew from there.
Sounds like an amazing story, but a story that reverberated around Australia during World War I and World War II thousands upon thousands of times.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And I found when I was I was never into military or history and things like that, but there's a lot of information on the effect that the war had on obviously the people that served and their loved ones, but really not much on grandchildren. And I sort of grew up without a grandfather at all. You miss out on things that kids with grandfathers will get, especially boys, I think, can learn a lot from grandfathers. So, yeah, I sort of quite sneakily said when Sir Eric Neill launched this book, he's 94 and a really wise man, and I said, I've adopted him as one of my grandfathers, and I tend to do that. So, yeah, missing out on a grandfather and missing out on some of that sort of accumulated wisdom and things like that really prompted me to sort of look into it more, and that was part of the genesis of the book.
Well, let's put a name to your granddad rather than just grandfather. What was his name?
His name was Edward Thompson Mobsby. The family knew of him as Mobs, but some of the people knew him as Eddie, and he had a few different nicknames we found out doing some research, but yeah, Edward.
Right. Let's call him Mobs.
Mobs.
His mates called him Mobs. He was born in 1910 and died in 1942 in New Guinea. What do you know about his life before he joined up?
He went to Pontney Grammar School here in Adelaide. He's actually remembered there in their memorial room. There's a picture and some information on him. And he worked for the Bank of New South Wales at that stage as an accountant. He wasn't really keen on flying, we learnt, but he joined the Air Force because he knew he had to serve. He knew he'd be expected to and should do that. And he thought if he joined up and trained to be a pilot, that might sort of take a couple of years and hopefully the war would be over by then. But, of course, it wasn't. So, he enlisted, and it was actually 76 years ago today that he was shot down over New Guinea, not far from Kokoda.
Wow, 76 years. It goes very quickly, doesn't it? Why did your grandfather join up? He had a young family at the time, didn't he?
Yeah, Mum and her twin sister were only two or three at the time, but I guess like a lot of men in the era, they were duty-bound. We think he actually signed up to go to England to help out resisting the planned German attack of England, but that was diverted when the Japanese moved close to Australia, so we think that was his motivation anyway.
How did that affect your mother's life?
I guess like lots of kids born without dads and with affected closely by the war. Mum sort of grew up in a fairly frugal household, and she lived with her grandmother and auntie and mum, and no doubt it had a huge impact on mum's life.
You and your family have travelled to New Guinea and to Japan chasing your granddad's story. Where did you go to in New Guinea and what did you discover?
we found out where the wreck site was at a little village called Isogi, and so we flew into a place called Popondetta, and Isogi is not far from Kokoda. So we visited the wreck site. We found some people who can remember the crash and confirmed to us that no one survived, and showed us where Mobbs was buried first, and then he was subsequently moved to another cemetery and then another cemetery. And I guess when I was there and at Kokoda, I was reflecting a lot on obviously what my grandfather was going through, because we were retracing his steps. And I sort of half expected there to be an apology from the Japanese there at Kokoda, saying, sorry guys, we overstepped the mark and we've changed and things like that. But there was nothing there. And so when I got back, I contacted the Japanese embassy and some other groups and saying, has anything changed? Did Mobbs die in vain? Was it all the sacrifice made by the New Guineans and Solomon Islanders and Americans and Australians, was it all in vain? And they actually put me in touch with a lady called Miyuki in Japan. Miyuki had actually taken her mother to New Guinea to trace the death of her grandfather within a week of us taking mum to New Guinea. So she had a really parallel story, but a very different perspective on the war and things like that. And we started communicating quite a lot and ended up going and visiting Miyuki with one of my daughters and visited Hiroshima. And yeah, it was very interesting. And that's actually quite a major part of the book, is how the Japanese had different perspectives on the war and what caused it. But the fact that both sides have suffered huge tragedies, the families and the economies, and Miyuki's very strong at sort of dialogue between different cultures and things, and how that can be really useful in helping preventing future wars.
Mm. Did you discuss Japanese wartime atrocities with Miyuki? Was she open to that?
Yeah, she understood that. It was really interesting. She was actually a bit concerned that the Chinese were still sort of demanding
reparation
for some of the atrocities and things over there, and she thought that wasn't really necessary. And she had, yes, obviously some different views, but yeah, really open heart and understood where we were coming from and understood the different histories and different perceptions and things. Like, it's really good for both of us, I guess. And sat down with her family and they told me their side of the story, and I came back to them, and it was good dialogue, really healthy dialogue, I think.
Really healing, I would imagine.
Yeah, and particularly so for Mum. Mum obviously grew up in a family that had been devastated by the war, and her mother and her grandmother harboured strong resentment to Japanese and anything Japanese, things like that. And I guess some of that carried through to Mum. But after a while, we sort of tread fairly carefully for a while, but then Miyuki started corresponding with Mum, and now they correspond regularly and they send each other presents, and they're both very similar perspectives and things like that. And so I guess it is a healing. It's taken a long time, 76 years or something, but now it's really opened up the dialogue and really showed us the benefit of just talking about things rather than having your own perceptions and things like that. Just talk to other cultures and the value in that.
It happens on all levels, doesn't it?
Absolutely, it does.
Just in a plain one-on-one relationship right up to countries throughout the world. Interesting that you said about Miyuki not being keen on the reparations continuing to be paid to China. What was her reasoning behind that statement?
Yeah, I'm not sure that I can actually answer that in great detail. There was a little bit of a language barrier there, but I think part of it was she thought that was a long time ago and things have moved on and China's now quite a wealthy economy, and so there was an economic reason for that. She didn't deny that those things occurred, but I guess maybe she's got a point that throughout history there's been a lot of conflict between different sides, and normally after the conflict finishes, that's the end of it. And I think her main thought was that why is it an ongoing issue with that, where it's not with a whole lot of other things as well. So I assume that was her main issue.
Mm. Do the Japanese learn about their part in the war? And is it a sanitised version?
Yeah, it's interesting, because what I learnt from Miyuki and her family and some of her friends were that after the war, Japan surrendered, then the Americans really sort of took over and really dominated the media and things like that for quite some time. And I guess they harboured some views that they were being presented with a sanitised version. They had their own perspectives. They're aware of the atrocities, and I guess, yeah, talking about them is one of the best things you can do. And yeah, Miyuki now goes to Southeast Asia and volunteers as an orphanage. She definitely knows all about it and is doing great things to help improve the situation.
That's great. Do you feel that World Wars One and Two came about partly through lack of genuine cross-cultural dialogue and understanding?
Yeah, well, I'm far too young to be able to have a strong opinion on that, but I mean, you mentioned before, it happens on every level. It's a lot easier to have a fight or have a gripe with someone that you don't understand and don't communicate with. But yeah, I think, yeah, on all sorts of levels, the more we talk, the more we have cross-cultural dialogue and, play sport and arts and things like that, the less likely we are to be aggressive towards each other. So I assume that's the case, but I'm not an authority on that.
No, neither am I. John, what do you know about your grandfather's service in New Guinea? Is it a very narrow field that you've learnt about his service in New Guinea, or do you know a fair bit?
No, we actually got the logs of all his bombing raids. He was a co-pilot in a B-25 bomber. It performed several raids, and that was the time that the Kokoda campaign was going, and the Japanese had a base to the north of New Guinea, and it was his role to try and bomb that base to slow them down. We even learnt the name of the pilot who actually shot his plane down, and we got first-hand accounts of the plane going down. And then I guess because they'd done three really risky raids in the space of a day and a half, the American Air Force bestowed a award of gallantry on all the American crew, and they did that straight away. But that wasn't done for Mobbs because he was an Australian, and it was only a couple of years ago in Canberra that I guess Mum was on the case, and she went as far as writing to Barack Obama and saying, come on, guys, it's only fair. My dad did exactly the same things, and they agreed, and we had a really rewarding and really memorable celebration at the Australian War Memorial, attended by a whole lot of American dignitaries and Australian dignitaries. And the Silver Star was presented to Mum and my auntie. It was a fantastic experience, and it really, for Mum at least, it was so important because her father never really had a funeral or commemoration service or anything like that, and it was really an opportunity to, after all these years, to recognise and reward his sacrifice.
I could understand that. I could certainly relate to it. So having looked into your grandfather's story, do you now understand his reason for enlisting? Has your question, dear Grandpa, why, been answered? And would you have made the same decision?
Yeah, that's a really tough question. I wish you didn't ask that one. I understand that his forebears before him had gone and represented their country in war, and I guess it's been happening for generations and generations, and will do so. I suspect if Australia was under threat, then I would probably do the same thing. What confused me a little bit was when he volunteered, it was because England was under threat. And as an Australian, I'm thinking, well, if England was under threat now, would I volunteer? And I'm not sure that I would. But definitely, if Australia was, I would. But I understand exactly why he did, and it was expected of him. I'm sure, I assume he discussed it with my grandma and his parents and things, and it was the thing to do. So it's terrible that you even have to make that decision. I guess the main decision is taken out of your hands. By the time war's declared, you're all really sucked into this vortex, and no longer are you in charge of where your life's going. That's one of the real things that I reflected on as a grandson. In this day and age, we can follow our dreams, whatever they are. I'm interested in conservation and looking after threatened species and all that sort of stuff, and there's no reason why I can't do that as much as I like. But granddad didn't have the opportunity of doing that. He couldn't follow his dreams. He and all his mates were sort of locked into going and representing Australia in war, and some of them died and some of them had horrible injuries and psychological impacts and things like that. But it was really wasn't their decision. They were sort of drawn into it. So all the more reason for sort of encouraging dialogue and with foreign affairs and diplomacy and foreign aid and things like that, which I think are really important and are often not really represented. Often when you hear the budget given every few years, it's an easy cut to cut the foreign aid budget and to cut diplomacy with different countries. But the money you save with respect to if we went to war with some of these countries, then a whole society changes and economies change. So, yeah, that's just one of the things that came out of all my reflections on this war business.
Very in-depth, John. Very in-depth. Do you think Australia is doing enough to further cross-cultural dialogue?
Yeah, once again, that's probably a little bit out of my field. I know that our expenditure on diplomacy and foreign aid and things has been declining quite a lot, and several of the think tanks consider we should be devoting more attention to that. And I know it's not politically popular to do that because it doesn't affect us all day by day, but I would imagine, looking after and being involved in global events and things like that, whether it's diplomacy or climate change, all that sort of stuff, it's got to be good long term, and I think more important than some of these short term initiatives that get more attention.
John, thank you very much for coming on Service Voices and talking about your grandfather.
No worries. Thanks a lot for having me in here.